Morning. Let's start off by just doing 2 or 3 minutes of silent meditation. So why don't you find a posture that is erect and yet relaxed. Come on in. And we'll just sit quietly for a couple minutes. You might want to begin by taking a couple of nice deep breaths, breathing in fresh, cool air, and letting go of any stress or tension that you don't need. And then when you're ready, you can just let your breath resume to its normal pace and just surf your breath. Just follow your breath. Notice it when it enters your nostrils and goes down into your chest. Let it just flow out all on its own. Just breathing naturally and quietly. And bringing your mind back to your breath. Okay, I think that's long enough. That's what we do here, day after day. Morning and evening. Day after day. It's called Zen meditation. So this morning I want to talk about signs of progress in meditation, which is actually a no-no in Soto Zen. But forget that. Signs of progress. I want to touch on 8 signs of progress. First, increased concentration. Our concentration actually does increase after a while. Even if it's only from being able to watch one breath, one entire breath, in contrast to maybe only getting through half a breath before your mind wanders off. Or maybe 2 breaths instead of 1 breath. Concentration improves. That's one sign. Now, you don't necessarily manifest all 8 of these, but you might. You might. When concentration increases, then bodily awareness increases. Naturally. Naturally. Notice where you're holding your stress. Let it go without even trying to let it go. You notice when you're slouching, you just get into a rep posture without even paying attention to it. So that's the first sign of progress. You won't find these probably in a book because I just made them up. I've been sitting for a while. The second one, moments of intimacy with the immediate world. Moments of intimacy with the immediate world, with no mediator, just for a moment. No mediator. Noticing the beauty around us. Beauty all around us without a mediator. It happens if you practice meditation. You just notice it. So when I was in college, I'd been meditating for maybe a year or so, year or year and a half, and there was some impressionist art that I walked by going to class every morning. And you know, I never paid any attention to it. But then one morning, I did my meditation, and I went by it, and I looked at it, and I had never seen it before. And of course, being impressionistic, what Monet was trying to do was capture something before we thought about it. So, being impressionistic, once my mind was just a little bit still, I began enjoying art the way I had never enjoyed it before. Especially the art that was not conceptual. And I actually was going to change my major. I was so enamored with what I've discovered that I was going to change my major to art history. But I never did that. Maybe next time around. So Basho, Zen poet Basho, his poems are a lot of them about intimacy with the world around us. Just the simple beauty of whatever. Here's one. In the morning dew, dirtied, cool, a muddy melon. In the morning dew, dirtied, cool, a muddy melon. Ordinary, right? And yet extraordinary. If you just look, if you just see it. Like Monet's haystacks. Anybody know Monet's haystacks? People were pretty pissed. All of France was in an uproar about Monet's haystacks. How would anybody show those haystacks? They weren't art. Look at them. Look at them. Look at them with your fresh eye. If your eye isn't fresh, you really look. Your eye becomes fresh. Another by two or three more by Basho. When I look carefully, Nazuna is blooming beneath the hedge. Nazuna is a tiny little flower, tiny little white flower. If you look, you see that it proliferates beneath the hedge. It's all over the place. But usually we just ignore these things because we're so caught up in trying to. Whatever we're trying to do. Whatever we're trying to do. Here's another one. The well bucket, taken by the morning glory, I beg for water. The well bucket, taken by the morning glory, I beg for water. So he's so taken by the beauty of just that morning glory on the well bucket. Twining it, that he doesn't want to disturb it. He goes and begs for water. Maybe that's the beginning of altruism. Maybe that's the beginning of love. Just to see things as they are and appreciate their wonder because they are. Maybe so. Maybe so. Final one by Basho about the second sign of progress. Look, children, hailstones, let's rush out. Look, children, hailstones, let's rush out. So, beginner's mind. This is what my teacher talked about. Beginner's mind. Don't scream. Scream. So, we're beginning when we have these moments of awareness to let go of our armor of fear. So last was it Saturday or Sunday? I went with my grandsons to the big swimming pool way down in Richfield or Bloomington. And my 5-year-old grandson had his life jacket on the whole time, And he also clung to me the whole time. He's not ready to let go. It's scary. That water is scary. He's not ready just to be in it. So, that's fine. That's fine. Because there's no point in forcing this on us when we're ready, when our meditation matures. Now I'm moving from him to meditation, but it's the same thing. We do let go. We do open up. And last week he had swimming lessons, and I asked him on Tuesday how they were going. And he said, great. And I thought, great. Well, he never even let go of me. And I said, do you have your life jacket on? He said, no. I think I'm going to get to see him swim this afternoon. We'll see what happens. Something happens when we just are ready to let go, doesn't it? Really immerse ourselves in this, without knowing what it is, without needing to know what it is. So that's the second sign of progress. And they're written in your handout if you want to look at them. Third sign of progress, enlightenment. Well, that's the sexy one, right? That's the one that everybody is interested in. But it's just one among many. Really, it's just one among many. It's a cool one. It's a cool one. Why not? It's a big letting go. It's letting go of Tim, letting go of trying to accomplish stuff or be anyone, letting go of all that chattering. Completely, right? So here's the Zen Master Hakuin's experience talk, just little phrases about his first experience of real enlightenment. And this is during a sesshin, 7-day sesshin. That's a seven-day retreat. At around midnight in the seventh and final night of sesshin, the boom of a bell from a distant temple reached my ears. Suddenly, my body and mind completely dropped away. I rose clear of even the finest dust. So all of his concepts about his body, his mind, getting calm, being someone, letting go of his thoughts even, all that stuff dropped away. So it's not that he rose clear in his astral body. Like somebody said to me, oh, he rose clear into his astral body. No, this is a metaphor. He let go of this distorting lens, this distorting lens of thought. He just let go of it completely. And the concepts of body and mind, without the distorting lens, we're free of the concepts. We can use them when we need them, but we're free of them. We call that Buddha nature, right? That's our nature, to be free of them. So, when I was a young man, I had an experience like this also in a sesshin. And it was more like on the fifth day. Sesshins traditionally are 7 days in Japan, and they were in China too. We have only one seven-day retreat. That's in December. That can be any amount of time, but this kind of experience more often than not happens when you've really immersed yourself in stillness for a while. Generally won't happen after 20 minutes of sitting. Could, but generally not. Because during that 20 minutes, maybe by the 19th minute, we start slowing down a little bit. So Hakuin says, overwhelmed with joy, I whooped at the top of my lungs. After that, however, I became extremely proud and arrogant. Oh, that's why this one in it by itself ain't too cool. Oh, you think it's cool. I thought it was cool, but... Right? The eye comes right in there and grabs it. I got it. Right? That's the third one. Enlightenment. The fourth one, responding, not reacting. To do this, we need to begin to notice the gaps between the stimulus and the response. Always we're being bombarded by stimuli. And usually we're just habitually reacting to those stimuli, whatever they are. And we can notice our emotional reactions, our anger, our anxiety, our stress to the stimulus. But there's a gap between that stimulus and even the reaction. And as our mind, we begin to be more conscious of our psyche in a non-judgmental way, we begin to see those gaps. And just a tiny gap is a moment of choice, right? I don't have to lash out at my wife for doing whatever. I don't have to. I have a choice. I have a choice. We're not too good at human beings about this one. We don't do too good a job, do we? Whether we're kids or adults, we don't do too good a job. All the wars. I mean, I think about, lately I've been reading about the Palestinians and the Israelis. I'd rather not read about them. How many decades have we been reading about them, hearing about them? I was thinking about them the other day, and I was watching my 5-year-old and my 8-year-old grandson. I was listening to them fight in the back seat. So they're in the back seat, and if the 5-year-old goes over the line, the 8-year-old has drawn a line in the back seat. If the 5-year-old goes over the line, he gets smacked big time. And then he smacks back. He's much smaller, but he smacks back. You know? My sister and I did that in the back seat when we go on trips. You know, and I was the older one, so I was Israel, right? But my sister hit me back hard. She was little, and she hit me back hard because, you know, protect herself, right? Protect herself. So, do this, but we have a chance always to notice the gap between what comes in and how we react to it. We don't have to react to it. We can just respond. We can just respond. Well, that's a sign of progress. Even if you do this once, it's a sign of progress in your meditation. And the next one is, the fifth one, is dissatisfaction with our meditation. Dissatisfaction with our meditation is a sign of progress. That sounds strange, doesn't it? But think about it. Think about it. In your meditation, you begin to notice that the way you know things is undependable. That your thinking and your emotion are undependable guides. So, that's dissatisfaction when you notice that. It's dissatisfaction. You think, oh, maybe I should quit this meditation. And you begin to notice how much your mind is out of control. Because you don't have a television set to run to. You don't have a book. You don't have a project. You're just sitting facing the stupid wall. And your mind is so you get dissatisfied. You get discouraged. Because you think your mind is worse than it was before you started meditation. Before you began. It's not. You're just more aware. You're just more with it. Because you're not repressing it. So that dissatisfaction in meditation, I don't mean to be flippant at all. It's a good sign. It's a good sign. It's a good sign. And if you stay with that dissatisfaction, it might turn into real doubt. And then it could even turn into to what's called in Zen the great doubt, where you just doubt everything. You doubt your ability to do anything. Good stuff. Good stuff. Why? Because this problem of this little guy in here who believes he's real and can control things, if he begins doubting himself and really takes this doubt to his cushion, he can use that as a focus for looking into this. What is this? What is going on here? What is it? What is this feeling in my shoe, this rock in it? Continually, this rock of doubt, of dissatisfaction. What is it? Use that as your focus for your meditation. You don't need a koan. You don't need to study Rinzai Zen. You've got a koan already. Most of us do. If we don't, just sit for a little while more. Just come join me in our next retreat. That doubt becomes a good tool for looking at who am I? What is this? Who am I? What is this? So we open into a space beyond our incessant thinking. Just through that questioning, through that heartfelt questioning. Heartfelt, not just intellectual exercise, but heartfelt. Something deeper. Something more enduring. But if I say that, then you have an image of something enduring. No. Doesn't endure, and yet it's enduring. Sorry. So that's the fifth one. The sixth one is relaxation about making progress. Oh. Can you relax into not thinking about making progress during your meditation? Can you just relax into that? And maybe progress is irrelevant. Just relax into not making progress and just come back to this. As long as you're focused on making progress, you're judging yourself. You're splitting yourself. Oh my God! You know she's sitting so much stiller than I am, and she's only been coming here for a couple of years. I'll ignore her. I'll look at him. Look, et cetera, et cetera. Right? Judging, evaluating, relaxation about not making progress. Instead of meditation and enlightenment. This long, arduous road with all this doubt and all this reactivity, we do Dogen, meditation enlightenment, practice enlightenment, one word. One word. It used to make me mad when I'd read Dogen. What do you mean, Dogen, practice enlightenment? He always does one word. Same thing, meditation, practice, enlightenment. Enlightenment, meditation, practice. No gap. Well, I got mad because I wanted to. Jeez, I gave up my life to do this. Give up my life. I give up my livelihood. For years, I give up my livelihood to do this stuff. And progress is irrelevant? Well, progress, of course, is important because there are signs of progress. But if you think about progress and worry about progress, you're missing this relaxing into not making progress, into not thinking about progress. Right? And the seventh one, feelings of calmness. Feelings of calmness. So, Lao Tzu, one of my favorite guys, the 30 spokes unite in the one nave, but it is on the empty space for the axle that the use of the wheel depends. Clay is fashioned into vessels, but it is on their empty space, empty hollowness that their use depends. The door and windows are cut out from the walls to form an apartment. This is an unusual translation, I think, because I don't think there were apartments in Lao's days, nevertheless. The doors and windows are cut out from the walls to form an apartment. But it is on the empty space within that its use depends. So that space that's always here, no matter how fast your thoughts are going, there's space between each of those thoughts. And in meditation, you can begin to sense that. And if you say, oh, that space wasn't long enough, oh, then you miss it. But there's another chance, always another chance. And real calmness there, real calmness here. So Lao Tzu again. The still mind of the sage is the mirror of heaven and earth, the glass of all things. Vacancy, stillness, placidity, tastelessness, quietude, silence, and non-action. The perfection of the Tao. The perfection of the Tao. Here's Basho again. Basho. Though the moon is full, everything is absent. Suma in summer. So he's in the countryside around Suma in Japan. There's a full moon. And the moon is so full that he doesn't see the stars. He doesn't see people as individuals. He just feels the calmness of the moon manifesting itself everywhere, everywhere. Though the moon is full, everything is absent. We don't want everything to be absent, but it's in this great absence that we find fullness. That's where we find real stillness, in this absence. Though the moon is full, everything is absent. Suma in summer. And the last one. Accepting change, even embracing change. And here's a couple of Basho's and an Isa. Basho. The white bait, they open black eyes to the net of the law. The white bait, they open black eyes to the net of the law. White bait is a tiny little fish that I've never seen, but proliferates in parts of Japan, at least used to. And it has a tiny little fish with very big eyes. And the eyes just seem to look. And fishermen catch them in the nets. Sometimes they're so small that sometimes they fall through the nets and go back in the water. And so this was Basho looking at the fish and just noticing how they're just there with whatever's happening. They're just there with this flux, this change of going in and out of the net. Sometimes escaping, sometimes going deep into clear water, and sometimes getting caught. So the equanimity of just being with it, whatever change comes, just accepting it. And change is what life is all about, and change is hard. And even positive change. You know, studies showing that there's as much stress when there's positive change as when there's negative change. As much stress on us. So being able to noticing it, you can accept it. You can accept it. Another one by Basho. Now being seen off, now seeing off the outcome, autumn in Kiso. So he's in Kiso and it's autumn. Now being seen off, now seeing off the outcome, autumn in Kiso. So these poet, Zazen poet guys, Zazen poet monks, although Basho was not a monk, they got together, they hung out together. Then when fall came, they all went back to their solitary lives. And so big change after hanging out and having fun all summer, just to leave. But in Kiso, when he looks out, he sees everything is changing in autumn. Of course it is. Everything is changing. The leaves are changing color, they're falling. So just to be with that, just to notice that, without trying to resist it, without turning into something awful, or something we have to protect ourselves. Because it's just happening, continually. And here's Isa. While the dewdrop world is a dewdrop world, the dewdrop world. You know that metaphor in Buddhism? The dewdrop world. While the dewdrop world is the dewdrop world, yet. Well, that's Isa. Yet. So sadness comes with change often. But we don't get rid of sadness by getting advanced practice. We're more just with it. We're able to be with it. We don't make something out of it. We don't say we shouldn't be sad or use a huge story about how this compares with another time we were sad or how sad I am in comparison with you. I only lost my father, you lost your whatever. We're just with it. We're just with it. So part of accepting and even embracing change is the accompanying emotion. The emotions that come up, we don't get rid of in our sitting. They become more alive in our lives, but we don't have to create all these stories about them. We can just let them be without trying to push them into some kind of mold. So this teaching I talked about last time, it's for me right now, but it's probably for many of you too. But it's for me right now specifically in that I am retiring from something I loved doing for 18 years, a career that I just loved. And people ask me how I'm feeling. And I say, sad? And they want to talk me out of it. They want to say, oh, well, you're going to find something. You'll find in retirement. Why won't they just let me be sad? Because it makes them nervous. It makes them nervous, that emotion. It makes them nervous, too, so they want to... Right? It's interesting, isn't it? It's interesting, isn't it? I think strong emotion makes us nervous because we think... I don't know. Why does it make us nervous? It's wonderful if we don't turn it into a federal case. It's wonderful, isn't it? But usually we turn it into a federal case. So those are the eight, and I'll read them, and then we can see what you guys would like to ask about or comment on. Increased concentration, intimacy with the immediate world, enlightenment experience, increased ability to respond rather than react, increased dissatisfaction, relaxation about making progress, feelings of calmness, accepting and even embracing change. Anybody? Okay.
So, what made you decide that you needed to make this list?
Oh, I needed to give a talk. I never would have made the list had I not had to give a talk. Giving these talks is wonderful because everything I've learned about Buddhism and about how Buddhism is relevant to our daily lives has mostly come from, oh, I have to give a talk.
I guess my question is why did you feel like you needed to define steps to move?
Why did I feel I needed to define?
Why did you need to, why did this
Oh, for me? Yeah. Gee, I don't know. Because I was talking to a couple of my family members who were saying they didn't feel like, and friends, they didn't feel like they were making progress in their meditation. And people in Doksan, I think in one-to-ones, which are called Doksan, I probably in the last year have had 15 people tell me they're not making progress. And so I see that they are making progress. They're not just people who just do it once. So it's meant to be encouraging. And of course, the implication here is that you're doing a daily sitting practice. That's the implication. Because you don't make progress, you've heard me talk about this before, in learning a foreign language if you just study it for a half hour on Saturdays. You don't learn. You don't learn Spanish. You certainly don't learn Chinese. You don't even learn Spanish that way. So what else? What else? Questions or comments? Yeah, sure.
I have a question about what happens in the mind, if you're aware of this, of someone who has reached a level of meditation that you would consider to be enlightened. Is there just nothing there? Is it colors? Is it like being in outer space? I mean, what is it like?
Well, it's just pretty ordinary. It's just letting the thoughts come in and not letting them go out and not making a federal case out of them. And when you notice you're making a federal case, you just breathe and the federal case goes away. Colors? Well, sure, the color of your face, but not colors in here. Colors in here, maybe, but not necessarily. Just ordinary. Just ordinary. Is that satisfying or dissatisfying? My answer.
You mentioned once walking through the mist, kind of analogy.
Mm-hmm.
That isn't necessarily boom all of a sudden.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
You have this thing, but it creeps up on you.
Yes, that's what we. That's a very common metaphor in Soto Zen. That Katagiri Roshi used to use a lot. People would rush up to him and talk to him about how their meditation was horseshit. And he'd say, well, just keep walking in the mist. You don't realize that your clothes are getting wet, but this mist is good, and at some point, you'll be soaked. You'll be soaked. Oh, we have a little time. Yeah.
I just make a comment. In the olden days, you know, 50s and 60s, there was the existentialist era, there was a tendency to be aware of despair, ennui, angst.
Yeah.
And to just be with that.
Yeah.
Now in today's world, I think in our culture, there's more of a tendency to, whenever someone experiences that kind of thing, you always try to get rid of it.
Yes.
You know, buy a product.
Yes.
Something from late 19 or something like that sort of takes it away.
That's right. I agree. Did you guys hear what he said? Oh. Do you want to say it loud or do you want me to say it?
Well, I just was saying, like, in the olden times, you know, back in the 50s and 60s, in existentialism, you know, there was a tendency to be aware of despair, angst, and ennui, you know, to be with that and just experience it, you know. And now in our culture today, I think there's more of a, whenever someone experiences it, you always try to get rid of it and help them to get beyond that, you know, therapy, buy a product,
yeah,
or something, or
yes, be with it. That's right. Could you guys hear him this time? Oh, mm-hmm. Some of them couldn't. Okay, so he's talking about the existentialists, whom he and I both spent time with because we're both pretty old. Sartre, Camus, Heidegger, Kierkegaard,
Beckett,
yes, Theodore Beckett, Ionesco, yeah. So the existentialists and the existential movement in Europe and in this country, there was a realization of the irrationality of human beings, how we clothe all of our activities in reason, but how this reason is a clothing of our angst, of our suffering, and the existential whole thing was this Western philosophy all covers it up. It's been covering it up for 2,000 years. And let's get in touch with this suffering of not understanding life, of feeling cut off. Let's go with it. The problem, from my point of view, is they needed to leave the coffee houses and go into the Zendo sometime. The next step would be to haul those guys into the Zendo. Oh, now you've got your... Now you get it. But now let's take it on the cushion. So rather than having to write a whole book about it and, you know, all drink extra coffee and whatever you do, just take it, keep it warm and use it as your tool for focus so that you can focus in on this despairing situation and actually break through it. We call that the bottom falling out of the bucket. But you have to go into the bucket first. You have to go into it, and it's dark in there. It's dark in that bucket.
I was thinking about something related to this. I have a 3-year-old daughter. She's 3.5, and I would read fantasy books. And this one is called How to Talk So Kids Will Listen, and How to Listen So Kids Will Talk. And it starts with how we
are really good at denying healing and how we train our children to do that. You know, like, oh, we're going to go to Grandma's house today. Aren't you excited for that? No, I don't want to go to Grandma's house. Yeah, you do want to go to Grandma's house. And, like, you know, they say they don't like something or they want, and we're really into trying to tell them how they should be doing instead of. It's not that if they say they don't want to go to Grandma's house that you change your plans. You just go, oh, okay, or, you know, you just don't have to deny the feeling that they express. And we all, I mean, I don't know if everybody here, but I feel like that's kind of a societal thing, which is you're not supposed to feel like that. You're supposed to feel like this.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. That's a good example. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah.
From a time perspective and based on your year's experience, do you think it's easier for people to make progress or more people making progress in their meditation?
Is it easier now than it was when I was a young man? Is that what you mean? I'm not clear what you're saying.
Observation of people. Are more people making progress?
He wants to know if more people are making progress now in their meditation than when we were young. Ooh. What do you guys think? What do you think, Larry? Larry says no. What do you think, Robert? Robert has no idea.
Let me add this. So we live more in a multitasking society where you're more busy doing more things at the same time, and does it take less amount of silence
Yes.
Sort of knock you out of that.
Yes. So he's concerned about, I'm talking to folks in the other room now, about the fact that in this multitasking society, is it harder for us to make progress in our meditation? Is that what you're one of the things you're talking about?
My hypothesis is that maybe it's easier.
Oh, is it easier? Is it harder or easier?
Sort of a contrast thing.
Because you're so far in the other direction.
Yeah.
That any little bit will get you.
Right.
Well, I don't know.
Are there generational differences?
Yeah.
Well, there are generational differences. You see, in my
generation. Yeah. Thousands of years.
Yeah.
Generations.
Yes, there are. There certainly. There are generational. Significant generational changes. In my generation, I was not the only one who gave up a career to do this. I mean, I gave up a career. And later I came back, but, you know, I completely dropped out and spent all my time with San Francisco Zen Center and Tassajara, the Zen monastery. People don't do that much anymore. And although many, many more people come here than used to, the number of people who stay for long retreats has diminished over the years. So we have all these people here, and yet when it's our retreats, we have less. But I don't think that's because of people's aspiration is less. I think it's because, I don't know, something about the pressures of the world make it so, you're going to lose your job, you're going to lose time, you won't see your children. We're so compressed in this multitasking society, I think that. Since you asked the question, my special interest is in sitting in retreats with people as a teacher. And so I do feel sad about that cultural change, which actually seems to be not just at this Zen Center, but I see it all over the place. What I feel good about is that meditation is no longer this esoteric thing. There were just a small group of us who did it back then, and other people considered us weird. Of course, we like being weird, you know. but now lots of people realize that just 3 minutes a day of sitting and looking at the lake and breathing can be restorative, and that's what meditation is. So that's my cultural commentary. But that's just on this last few decades. I can't go back beyond the 60s. Yeah.
Do you think that sitting meditation is more effective than reclining meditation?
She wants to know if I think sitting meditation is more effective than reclining meditation. Well, The problem with reclining meditation, is cool, but in Zen we emphasize sitting and walking meditation because in reclining meditation you can very easily go to sleep. You can very easily get really daydreamy. When you're sitting with an erect posture, it's not so likely you'll get daydreamy. Or when you're walking, just doing slow walking. So that's my simple answer to that. What else? Yeah.
Well, I don't know too much about transcendental meditation.
Oh yeah.
Once you give up the power, how do you know that? You know, your nothingness is going to choose to, like, you know, stay here with the Lutherans or go out to the snake charmers. You know what I mean? Once you give up the power to quote my, you know, I mean, this is transcendental, going somewhere else rather than staying here with the breathing.
Well, this isn't transcendental meditation that we do here, you know.
Right.
So I actually don't want to comment on transcendental meditation because I've never really done it. Does anybody want to comment on transcendental meditation? Yeah.
Started by a guy called Maharishi Yogi.
Maharishi.
Yeah, that's right.
And basically, it's about the soul becoming one with God. Is the theological aspects of it are much different.
Mm-hmm.
Zen has kind of a Hindu spin, New Age thing.
That's right.
And it kind of more tends to emphasize things such as chakras and energy centers in the body, and more kind of an Ayurvedic scientific method rather than it's a lot different than that aspect.
That's right, and Ayurvedic medicine actually, and is very, very ancient and came out of the Upanishads and the Vedas as transcendental meditation did. So I didn't quite get what your question was. Did
well, I was kind of looking for...
Pardon?
I guess I was kind of trying to figure out, once you release your power, just be in the present.
Yeah.
You know, there's... How does your whatever... No, to choose to stay here or go off with the transcendental. Once you release it, you know.
Oh, well, you don't know, and you can, this is actually seeing how to not be caught by patterns, not be caught by any patterns. So once you see that you can release these patterns of activity, these patterns of thought, you can do TM or Zen or stand on your head by Lake Calhoun, or do all three. And of course, you may then say, this pattern is best. The TM pattern is best, or the Zen pattern is best, or the standing on your head by Lake Calhoun is best. Well, if it becomes a pattern, if it becomes a stimulus-response pattern with no gap, it's not best anymore. Best is just to be with what is. Is that helpful or not?
You're as smart as I am, it'll do.
Okay. Yeah.
There's different paths to meditation.
Mm-hmm.
One is sort of unplugging from everything.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one is kind of more being with everything. I think that's a...
Okay, well, that's an interesting way to talk about it, unplugging and being with. But the more you unplug, the more you're with.
Right.
The more you're with, the more you get unplugged.
Yeah. I've heard of some study where two styles of meditation, one was there'd be some sound stimulus.
Uh-huh.
And this one group, it would not register.
Uh-huh.
At all.
Uh-huh.
And then with, I believe it was Zen meditation, it would be the same intensity each time, and just a person sitting neutrally.
Yeah.
It'd be big at first, and then it'd acclimate.
That may be true, but even in concentrated meditation, the goal of our concentration is to become one-pointed enough and our mind to become slow enough so that we can just enjoy the bells and the static in the air and colors and all that stuff. So I think that's enough for this morning, and thank you.